This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Thomas Bombong-Vasuto is here tonight.
It's exciting to be here.
As usual, good to have you.
Yeah.
I just got back from Louisiana fishing with the grandchildren. Yeah. We had a great time.
I saw some pictures of big fish today.
Big fish. That was a great fishing trip. We caught over 300 fish, and four of them were big trophy red
fish.
Bull red, and just love that kind of fishing anyway. Mm-hmm. So we had a good time. But tonight on Money, Riches, and Wealth, we have a guest.
Yes,
tell everyone who our guest is, and then we'll go into the show.
Yeah, well, we have a very distinguished guest. Farrier Stillman is a partner at Tidings, and her focus is on family law, and she also does health care work with senior housing and health care practices. And so, family law is a pretty broad area. But, there's things like divorce and divorce cases and how do you divide it. So it's really the complex cases around family law and including custody and adoptions, paternity, all of those kinds of issues. And she's really an expert in this area. And we've gone to her many a time when we've had difficult situations.
Yep, absolutely. Farrier, are you with us? Farrier, there you go. Are you there now, Farrier?
I am.
There
you
she
are.
Is. Yep, we got you.
How are you?
I'm sorry, were you asking me to say something?
Yes. You are with us now.
I'm saying hello to you.
What would you like me to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about family law. So family law, that's a gentler and kinder way of saying divorce in a lot of ways. But as Tom says, it means lots of things now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Family law can be divorces, custody, child support, alimony, division of property generally.
So, even paternity, I guess, comes into that too, right?
Absolutely. Paternity and also premarital agreements, adoptions, guardianship, and postmarital agreements.
So divorce, when I've worked with clients who have either just recently been divorced or going through a divorce, they always say if it's the lady, they're saying the courts are biased against the women. And if it's a man, they always are saying the courts are biased against men. Is there a bias in divorce law today?
I think there's a lot less of one than there used to be. It is easier still for women to get custody, in part because they're more likely to have taken some time off from work to take care of the kids or have a job that maybe is less demanding so they can be home more with the kids. And that's a gross generalization. But those help women in custody cases. But I would say that's a small number of them. I mean, nowadays, there's very little bias toward one gender or the other.
There's a lot of just generic law. I don't know how to say the word, but there's a lot of law that just says, okay, you're getting a divorce. Tell us how much you make, how much you have. Okay, this is the rule. Boom, 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 boom. And joint custody is a typical custody arrangement, isn't it?
No.
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 It's just maybe the circumstances that I see, joint seems to be, I guess that's if it's mutually agreed on.
Yes. People can absolutely agree to joint custody or one party or the other having custody, but the law is very clear. There is no legal bias toward joint custody. Though it's more common to have joint legal custody than shared physical custody.
Okay. So shared physical, explain that difference, joint custody versus shared legal custody.
So any type of legal custody is the right to make decisions about very significant issues, generally considered health care of the children, education of the children, religion of the children, and sometimes extracurricular activities and sports. And that can be joint. It can be one parent has it all to themselves, or it could be joint, but if they don't agree, one parent is the tiebreaker. Physical custody means who the kids live with. So it could be primary physical custody to one parent, the other only gets access or visitation, or it could be shared physical custody where the child or children live some of the time with each parent.
So when you have joint custody and you have, a difference of opinion, let's say for religious matters, the joint custody normally has one parent gets to make the final decision or what?
Sometimes, but I think with legal custody, which is what you're talking about, it is more common nowadays to have joint legal custody than one party or the other having it. But there are people who just can't do joint legal custody. They can't agree today is Wednesday.
Well, what happens if you have joint legal custody and a year or so goes by and everything's fine and then all of a sudden they come to a big disagreement on something? What then happens?
So there are a couple choices. Many people's separation agreements, marital settlement agreements, say if you're in that situation, you have to go to mediation once or twice to try to work it out. If you don't have that clause or after you try mediation, the only other option is to go back to court.
So you'd have to actually go back to court and ask a judge to help you make a decision?
Yes.
And if you don't make a decision in front of the judge will just make the decision.
Exactly.
That would be the worst of all scenarios. So, there's a lot going on with the new tax law, Farrier. And when we come back after this traffic break, we're going to talk about how this new tax law is dramatically impacting your area of law. But right now we have to take a traffic break. So we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you and your family can trust and count on for the rest of your life? The Financial Consulate, being fee-only, is unable to take commissions or referral fees. We are independent of stockbrokers and insurance companies and work solely as a fiduciary in your best interest. These are the key ingredients of a professional financial advisor. If you've been wanting a second opinion, then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com to learn more. That is financialphysical.com. And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're back, and we're with Farrier Stillman. She's a family law attorney with Tidings and Rosenberg here in Baltimore. And Farrier has been extremely helpful to us with a lot of our clients and going through any kind of family law issue. And family law a lot of times is dealing with divorce. And the whole world of divorce planning, I guess, is going to change, isn't it, Farrier, with this new tax law? And the shifting of alimony from taxable to and tax deductible to tax free to the recipient and not tax deductible anymore. Yes?
That is exactly the situation.
And I guess right now you're really getting, difficult because people want to either stall or quicken the pace of getting this settled and So, okay, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, Farrier. Go ahead.
Well, you've said everything I was going to say, so that clearly shows how much you know about finances and taxes, because that is exactly what's going on right now.
It's got to be really frustrating to you, too. The ones that you want to quicken, you can't quicken them, and the ones you want to slow up, you're having to really hold the reins as tight as possible. It's got to really be driving you crazy.
Well, the way I look at it is it's a very fruitful period to settle cases and not go to court because you have one party very incentivized to settle before the end of the year, and the other spouse is willing to make a horse trade to get it. So now there's this sort of grace period where everyone can negotiate. What concerns me is after December 31st, that the change in the tax law is going to make it less likely that people will settle their cases and more likely that they'll go to court to get their case resolved.
So the three of us all know what we've just said, but the people out there in the car may not understand what we're talking about.
So give them an example.
So, Ferry, why don't you walk people through the scenario there?
Okay. So before December 31st, a payor of alimony may be willing to pay more because he or she is going to get a tax deduction. And the payee may be willing to agree that the alimony is going to be taxable to him or her because they can get something else in return for doing it before the end of the year. The problem that's going to come on January 1st is the payors are going to say, well, I'm not paying that much alimony because I don't get the tax deduction. So that's going to be a big change in the situation.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody's sitting there in December saying, I'll give you $5,000 a month for the next 10 years or whatever, and thinking that it's tax deductible, and then all of a sudden they get to January and still no agreement signed. Now if they sign the agreement, it's not going to be tax deductible anymore. Are they able to just come back and say, I'll give you $3,000 a month now because I'm not going to get a tax deduction anymore?
Yes. If you don't resolve your case, either by a judge deciding what happens or the two people agreeing by December 31st, alimony can absolutely not be tax deductible from January 1st on.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there was an agreement prior to December 31st. I mean, there could have been an agreement on December. There could be an agreement on December 30th or 20 years ago, as long as that agreement said the alimony was tax deductible, it remains tax deductible after January 1st. But if you don't have that agreement between husband and wife or husband and husband and wife, by December 31st, 2018, you are out of luck.
Are there formulas that the state of Maryland typically use to determine what alimony is going to be paid?
There are no mandatory formulas like there is for child support. There is a voluntary formula that spouses can use and that judges can use, but the difference is judges have to, they can't just use this voluntary alimony formula. They have to look at statutes and cases as well.
So how does the child support mandatory payment work? How does that get determined?
So if the husband and wife, so the spouse's combined income is $180,000 a year or lower, there is a formula that you can plug numbers in, and you plug each spouse's income, you plug things like a daycare in there or what they call extraordinary medical expenses or private school. You can put that in the formula, and the formula will spit out an amount of child support that should be paid. But if the spouses earn more than $180,000 a year, formula is not required.
And what happens if one spouse has the children, 6 months of the, every other week, and then the other spouse has it every other week? Is there just no child support since they basically have it 50-50 time?
No. So there is less child support paid than there would be if one parent had the children more than two-thirds of the time, but your income is plugged in. So a parent who has 50% of a child's time, if that parent earns more than the other parent, they're going to pay some child support.
Now, what's interesting also that I've learned over time is that, some people say, well, I'm just not going to work as much because I'm just not going to pay that kind of child support. So I just earn less, and therefore I don't have to worry about it.
Well, that's not likely to work because that's called voluntary impoverishment. And if someone does exactly what you described, they can have they can be charged with child support based on their former income, not their current income.
What if somebody typically wasn't working when they were married, but clearly has the career capability, but just decides, I'm just going to stay home with the kids. That way I'll get more child support. Would they still be able to get that, or would that same law apply to them?
It depends. If they are capable of working and the children are in school, typically the court would say, well, you could earn $30,000 a year, so we're going to pretend that's your income and plug it into the formula. If you have somebody who hasn't worked outside the home in years, 20 years or something, no, they will not be expected to work and get a job, especially if their spouse earns a lot of money.
So what if, you know, a lot of time you hear all these stories about prenuptial agreements and, you know, two people getting married second time, second marriage for both of them, or first marriage for one of them, let's say, and one has a lot of assets, and they go get a prenuptial agreement. They assume that that prenuptial agreement is, you signed the document, and therefore I'm protected, and there's no way that if we have a divorce that you're ever going to get anything more than that prenuptial agreement says. That's not necessarily 100% true, is it?
You're right. It's not. You, frankly, need a lawyer who knows exactly how to write a prenuptial agreement that will be accepted by the court. Sometimes prenuptial agreements aren't accepted. They're discarded because they don't follow the general rules about prenuptial agreements.
But then you also have to practice diligence in the assets that you have to make sure that you don't run amok of that prenuptial agreement too, right?
Exactly. And even if you have a prenuptial agreement, if a spouse gets money or an asset that they inherit or is a gift to them, they want to keep that completely separate from what's called marital property, which is essentially money you earn during the marriage. Because if you mix the two up, you're not going to necessarily get back at the end of the marriage something that you got through a gift or inheritance.
Yeah, and that's a difficult one. We'll probably try to talk more about that in the next 10 minutes or so. You're going to finish with us at 6:44, but we'll try to address more of what you just said there because that's an important one. But right now, Farrier, I've got to take one more pause with traffic, and we're going to be right back with Farrier Stillman. Talk more about family law. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com. And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're back, and we're with Farrier Stillman of Tynes and Rosenberg. She's a lawyer in family law. And Farrier, before we get into this last segment with you on the show tonight, why don't you tell people how to get in touch with you at Tynes and Rosenberg? And remember, when you give your phone number or web address, say it twice slowly so that everybody gets a good chance to write it down or remember it. All right?
Thank you. So my phone number is 410-752-9731. That's 410-752-9731. Or anyone can go on our website. It's TidingsLaw.com, T as in Tom, Y, D as in David, I, N as in Nancy, G, S as in Sam, L-A-W. Again, that is tidingslaw.com, T as in Tom, Y, D as in David, I, N as in Nancy, G, S as in Sam, L-A-W.com.
Well, great.
That's great, Ferry. And now, I know you're not going to toot your own horn, but I think I've lost count of how many times Maryland Super Lawyers has named you one of the top 50 women lawyers in Maryland. It's at least four times, I think.
I think it's something like that. I haven't.
Congratulations.
Either. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So we're excited to have you with us tonight. And once again, everyone, we have Ferrier Stillman from Tidings Law, Tyson Rosenberg. You guys still using the Rosenberg? Because you've cut it, it's a long name to use all of that, right?
So Tidings and Rosenberg is our legal name.
Yeah.
We have rebranded ourselves as Tidings.
Gotcha. All right.
So Ferrier, what were we talking about, the tax?
Well, parents give money for kids and setting aside that and child support and those kinds of things.
We were talking about something before the break, and I forgot what we were talking about, and I wanted to address it with her. What was it? Tax? Inheritance. That was it. That's what it is. That's a big one in Ferrier because, mom and dad worth, let's say, $1.5 million. They have one child. They leave them $1.5 million. That child, inherited from mom and dad, and a year later after he inherits $1.5 million, he's getting divorced, and all of a sudden his spouse's attorneys are saying, we want half of that inheritance that you got there. And unfortunately, he may not be able to retain the whole inheritance because he doesn't understand or she doesn't understand the laws around that. Why don't you help people understand a little better than what we quickly went over last segment?
So in a division of assets, an inheritance is not part of the assets that are to be divided. So if the husband inherits $1.5 million, he gets to keep that $1.5 million. The exception is if he put, let's say, that $1.5 million in a mutual fund or an investment account that also had money that he or his wife has earned during the marriage, it's going to be much harder to figure out which was the $1.5 million that he inherited and he should get back versus what was put into the account, deposited into the account from their earnings.
There's some level of commingling that's gone on of assets.
Exactly.
Right.
What if he does, he's married, so he's like, what when mine is yours and what's yours is mine, and, so he decides, dear, I love you, and I'm going to put your name on all these assets, so if anything happens to me, you can inherit them without having to go through probate and everything. A year later, she says, see you later.
He's going to have a very hard time being able to keep those assets, because once he puts his name on her name on any type of asset, whether it's real estate or an investment account or anything like that,
that he inherited,
he is essentially giving her a gift of half that money, and, too bad, so sad. He's going to lose it in a divorce.
Yeah, but go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, Ferry, I just wanted to ask about, because we only have a few minutes left with you. One of the biggest assets people have nowadays are the retirement assets, their 401ks and the like. There's a term out there called a quadro. Can you talk a little bit about some of the issues related to that and how that flows and what are some of the pitfalls that folks run into sometimes?
So the good thing is there's no way to put inherited money, with a couple of small exceptions, in a retirement account. So you don't have to worry about that aspect of it.
Right.
If, as part of the settlement, funds are going to go from one person's retirement account to, say, another person's IRA, that is not a taxable transfer. So the husband, let's say, who is transferring the money to the wife, and the wife don't pay any taxes on that, of course, as long as they move it from one retirement account to another. A quadro, which is a qualified domestic relations order, is just a mechanism to move money from one person's retirement account to another person's retirement account.
And that's strictly for employer-based retirement accounts to another person's retirement account.
Yes, except it would also apply to IRAs.
And I thought IRAs are typically divided just on the divorce agreement, yes?
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, if funds are transferred from one retirement account to another, that's always part of the divorce agreement. And if money is transferred from one IRA to another, that would also be part of the divorce agreement.
What's interesting, Farrier, is that we have people who will come in and they got divorced 5, 10, 15 years ago. And the spouse who was to take money from them still to that day hadn't gone in and split their assets out. Do you see that often? I mean, you know, maybe you don't because you're a extremely competent lawyer that that gets this done immediately for their clients. But I can't tell you how many times I've seen this.
Well, it's rare, although it seems to be happening more and more. You don't have to do it right away, but you would be smart to do it right away.
Now, some of it, like for example, if you're not going to get your monthly income from the state of Maryland or whatever pension you're going, you know, you're not going to get it until you're 60. I guess it's not critical to get it in there right away. But you're right. It would be wise to do it because if that one spouse goes in and the state of Maryland, let's say, doesn't know there's a quadro yet and he starts taking the full monthly amount, then it gets really complicated, doesn't it?
Well, yes, and actually what we do with pensions is we call it if, as, and when. So the recipient, the spouse that's getting the money, cannot get it till the employee's getting the money. So if the husband's the employee and let's say he's going to get $1,000 a month when he retires and she's going to get half of that, she cannot get that until he retires and gets the money.
Yeah, it gets quite complicated. That's why we appreciate having lawyers like you that we can talk to during these difficult times. But I know you have to go, and we have to go to our last traffic break. We really appreciate you being with us. Farrier Stillman with Tidings Law Firm in downtown Baltimore, one of the most gorgeous offices, I think, in all of downtown Baltimore.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you have one of those beautiful offices overlooking the harbor.
Oh, of course. Yes, I do.
All right. Well, Farrier, I appreciate your time being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. This is Drew Tignanelli. We're going to take a pause with traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. One of my all-time favorite songs. So, Thomas, what are we going to do for the last 15 minutes?
You know, we've been talking about family law. We've been talking about divorce. And, you know, frequently, Drew, when we're meeting with clients and we're talking about estates,
yep,
and we focus on titling and beneficiaries and wills, one of the things we talk about with beneficiaries is that people don't often audit their beneficiaries. And you brought up that case that occurred where somebody passed away after he had been divorced, had done the distribution, had done his quadro, but he never got around to changing his beneficiary on his 401k.
13 years later, the ex-wife comes in and takes all the 401k money from the children,
children. In spite of the fact that the divorce agreement, the quadro, and everything else clearly stated that she was supposed to get half, and she did, and ran away with that part of it. She got the rest of it when he passed away.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times people come to us with accounts at brokerage firms, insurance companies, mm-hmm. banks, et cetera,
right.
And we tell them to audit their beneficiary designations, and their beneficiary designations aren't close to right.
Right.
Now, you know, a lot of times they appear right. It's the spouse,
mm-hmm.
and then it's their three children. And they say, well, you know, I've got my spouse and the three children equally, one-third each. And I said, did you read the custodial agreement to see what it means when you put your three children down? So what happens if John, child number one, passes away before you two, and then, you know, your spouse passes away, and then you pass away? Are your grandchildren going to get John's one-third share?
Right.
And the answer is, according to this custodial agreement, no.
No. Right.
Your children, your two surviving children, are going to get 50-50. Oh, well, I'm not too concerned because they'll take care of the nieces and nephews.
Right.
Well, forget that.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen, and it's not that easy. What if it's all IRA money and it's all taxable? Susie and Billy aren't going to take the money out of their IRAs to give it to the nieces and nephews that easily without paying a boatload of taxes. So the beneficiary designations are critical. And what we were talking about with Farrier is one of the big issues that I think every parent who's got any kind of net worth that's going to go down to their children, let's put it this way, I look at it at a minimum of $500,000 per child.
Per child.
And if it's more than $1 million per child, you definitely want to consider this. And that's where you leave the money in trust to the child so that the child does end up in a divorce situation, it is unlikely that that money is going to be even remotely possible, argued that it is a marital asset. There will be no money being deposited in there. There will be no joint names put on those assets. And you know why this is important, Tom? So Billy and Susie are married, right? And Billy inherits $1 million from his parents, right? And he gets it and he looks and he says, well, I don't want to put this in joint name with Susie because if we get divorced, this would be a marital asset and I'm going to lose half of it.
Right.
Well, what's he communicating to Susie?
Yeah.
It's not a, you know, might as well just begin the divorce now.
Right there.
You know? Whereas if he inherits the money in a trust, he says to Susie, you know how controlling mom and dad are. You know, I have no idea why they were so controlling.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's a whole different dynamic when the parents did it, as opposed to if a marital couple inherits money and they sell to the other one, well, I don't want to put this in joint name with you.
Right. Yeah. They can shift it to the parent. The parents can take the burden of that, you know, that they made that choice, and it doesn't, you know, torpedo the marriage, you know, where for Billy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and but you know, like she said, if it's an IRA asset, then it's an inherited asset, and if it's an inherited asset, it's impossible in an inherited IRA to put the spouse's name on it. They can put the spouse as the beneficiary, but you can't put money in it, so it can't get tainted as a marital asset, and you can't put the other spouse's name jointly on the account, so it can't be tainted that way.
Right.
Inherited retirement account assets are unlikely to be affected there, but the required minimum distribution and things like that, you know, some lawyer could come in and argue that that's extra income that they could then allocate more alimony to. There are ways to work with that also. But, you know, you really need to think this out, what type of protection you want to put your children in.
Right. And you also have the case where you've got, you know, two folks that have gotten together for second marriages. They both have kids.
Yeah.
And then
they
both had houses, and then they're going to move into the one person's house. And so they move into the one house, and they're both living there. And so do they jointly title the house? Do they do something different? Because
they sign a prenuptial agreement, Tom?
Right.
You know, and that's a
And what is that communicating and so forth? And but how do you take care of the family? You know, a lot of our clients we've seen that have taken in, you know, kids, and they've treated them like their own, you know, and that's been their approach. But, you know, will they take care of the stepmother, if you will, when the person passes away? How do you provide for them while they're still alive, whoever the surviving spouse might be, but then have the assets pass to the children you wanted them to pass to? It's very complex.
Yeah, now the prenuptial thing, that's a complicated one, because you would immediately say that the one with the money, what are they communicating when they ask for a prenuptial agreement? But you can also flip that on the other side and say, what's the one that doesn't have the assets communicating if they get mad about a prenuptial agreement?
Right.
So
right.
It's a two-sided sword there,
sure. Yep.
And you really have to look at it, and there are reasons that you do it. Should, in my opinion, you should not be getting married if you're worried about divorce.
Right.
Period.
Right.
I don't know what the benefit is of getting
right.
married if you're sitting around worried about divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might as well just live together if that's your worry.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you do a prenuptial, in my opinion, when you're in a second marriage, is to protect the estate for your children.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are all kinds of scenarios that could happen. You could have the most caring, loving, honest spouse in the world, but if they're disabled when you pass away,
right.
some other family members or somebody else could come in as a guardian for them and say, wait a minute, she has a one-third right in his estate. There's no prenuptial agreement here, and I want one-third of those assets to continue to care for her, you know? And so a prenuptial agreement would just guarantee that what assets were guaranteed to that spouse, something happens, would go to them.
Right.
You know, those are the reasons that you think about a prenuptial. But as I tell the client, if you're going into a marriage and you're thinking prenuptial because if you get divorced, you don't want them taking the money,
then
I would say, just don't get married.
Yeah.
You know, what
right.
the heck are you thinking about?
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Anyway,
yeah.
Life is a lot simpler if you just think about it logically.
Right.
And, you know, anyway, so we got about a minute left. What's going on next week? It's just a regular old open show next week, right?
It's an open show there. Yeah, you and...
we try to do it. Every other show is a guest or, you know, an open show. So next week will be an open show. And tonight we were talking to Farrier Stillman. She's with Tidings Law Firm, downtown Baltimore, 1 East Pratt Street. If you want to look her up on the web, it's Farrier, F-E-R-R-I-E-R, right?
Yep.
Stillman, S-T-I-L-L-M-A-N. If you want to look her up, she's been excellent help to us in a lot of cases that we've had to deal. You know, I never got to talk to her about what happens when you have one spouse that's being deceptive and not trying to, you know, be honest and is manipulating things and
right.
so forth. That's a
yep.
that's a really complicated situation.
Yep,
it would have
sure
been
is.
Interesting to hear any true life stories that she's gone through
yeah.
in that. It would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure she's got some good ones.
I'm sure. Anyway, this is the end of Money, Riches, and Wealth tonight, but we'll be back next week with Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.